baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Here we are, my favorite show of the week, buddy. The show where you, the listener, do all of the prep. I love it. I get behind it. Welcome, everybody, to the walk-off. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. Every single Tuesday, we do a Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon where we comb through all of your discourse throughout the week. And we get to your comments, we get to your questions, we get to your thoughts. You can always reach out to us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, on Instagram, the Walk Off Podcast. Our Discord continues to grow. By the way, a little tip of the hat to about the dozen of you that recently joined the Discord over the last week. We've seen a big influx in people coming in. So welcome to everyone. And a lot of these new folks have been pretty interactive, Adam. So That's always nice to see too. Sometimes those newbies, they're a little trepidatious to get right in there, right?
But definitely.
Yeah, it's good to see. It's good to see the newbies out there.
Hey, you know what? It's a great place to hang out when Twitter burns to the ground. So
that's right, exactly. Let's start with this. Just I guess almost an apology to those of you who we don't wind up touching on your comments and questions. It has nothing to do with you and everything to do with the fact that we're probably getting to about 5% of the interactions a week these days. It's just the channel's growing. So good and bad for those of you who have been with us right from the start and were maybe used to getting your questions on every single week. We do also, by the way, with Patreon, if you're a member of our Patreon, you do get that little extra bump. We are going to make sure to get to any questions you may have. I know Wyatt reached out again today, so we're going to get to his question. And again, that's just one of the few little bonuses, if you will, to
priority
channel on Patreon.
Exactly. Priority questions. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get right to it, shall we, Scott?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So first and foremost, Yankees fans are the worst. And I just wanted to get that off my chest. Aaron Judge and his free agency came up last week. I think it was the tampering.
Yes.
Conversation with Cohen there with the Mets and everything. Yep. There. We weren't planning to talk about Aaron Judge's agent necessarily, but we did. I asked if he was represented by Boris.
To which I knew he wasn't and said,
you knew he wasn't. You knew he wasn't, but you didn't know who specifically he was represented by. And Yankees fans were so intolerant of how stupid
of our
we
ignorance.
Were. Unreal. How dare you guys not know the agent of every single player in baseball? So we just got a load of comments like that. And it was just a reminder to myself that, you know, the first 3 years of this show, we were 99.9% Blue Jays. And we've started
a cozy place
out
to be, eh?
And some, yeah, we're starting to cover some more
supportive
stuff.
Yeah.
It's a scary world out there. Once you leave Canada, that's for
yeah.
Sure.
As we branch out from Blue Jays land, it is a little bit harsher conditions, if you will.
Yeah. I haven't seen these words since I was in like grade six from some of these comments I'm getting from Yankees fans. So very colorful language we're getting our way. Anyways,
I do love that comment. You guys don't know Aaron Judge's agent? Weird. Is it weird?
We were talking this before we went live. I know Scott Boras by name. I know Rachel Lubin by name. And that's the list.
Yep.
That's my list of agents I'm familiar with. But if that makes us oblivious and idiots on baseball, then you must be new to the channel if that's the only reason you're yeah. dumb at this. All right, let's move on to a real question here. This is one we continue to get day after day. Comments like this one, which comes in from Art Vandelay, who, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, is a latex salesman.
Yes, that's right. Art Vandelay, love it.
All right.
Seinfeld fan.
So why on earth would you trade a stud like Kirk? Just trade Jansen. This is a question we get regularly. Obviously, you and I both love Alejandro Kirk, but yes, we have both been on the team of he's probably the one that we're going to have to move. It just makes more sense to us in our uneducated lack of agent familiarity level knowledge of baseball.
Here's the thing, okay? This catching quagmire, if you will, is a good thing. It does suck as Blue Jays fans to look at Danny Jansen, a gentleman who has been with this team since 2018. He's got so much experience accumulated over those 5 years in managing a pitching staff, getting close with the guys, right? Being able to, within the moment, change the plan of attack on a hitter. This doesn't happen overnight. This is, we've talked about a million times how experience can't be bought. It can't be magically put on or donned onto a catcher. You've got to go out there and play the games. And that's what Danny Jansen has done. Alejandro Kirk has been incredible, by the way. Yes. And he is one of the best offensive catchers in all of baseball. He was an all-star last year. He won a Silver Slugger. Everything I'm saying about Alejandro Kirk is meant with admiration and love for the dude. I'm not even saying he should be the one traded. Just when you look at the map out there, he just seems to make the most sense for numerous reasons. Trading, I would far rather Gabriel Moreno, if they're going to keep Kirk. Personally, I would rather them move Moreno in that case. Think how, do you know, like, and I did this last month where I combed through every single World Series winning team of the last 10 years. And then I took their catchers and calculated their combined experience, years of experience. Okay. The team with the absolute least to have won a World Series was that Astros Dodgers team in 2020. And they had Will Smith, who was in his second year, and then Austin Barnes as their backup with 7 years. So 9 years combined experience was the lowest amount of years of experience on a winning team, on a World Series winning team. Now calculate Gabriel Moreno, who's played 23 games, and Alejandro Kirk, who has 2 years of experience. It's not even close. It's not even scratching the surface. Now, I'm not saying, so what I'm saying, I guess, is if you are going to move Jansen, you probably still need to bring in another catcher. And then you're still in this three catchers to fill really two holes. Now, depending on how you want to operate with Moreno, I know that that last game of the season was kind of cool to watch them play him in left field, play him in second base, move him over to third. Does he have the ability to do that? Maybe. He does have a few reps at third. He's got a few reps in left field in the minors, but for the most part, he's been a straight up catcher. So that's my opinion as to why Kirk would be the guy you would move. And I'm not even saying I'm right. I'm just saying, depending on what this front office values, a lot of front offices values experience behind the dish.
Yeah. By the way, if you're bored at home, do not Google three catchers, two holes. You will regret it. For me, Scott, what it comes down to is, and you know, we talked about this article that we saw on MLB.com the other day with landing spots for Shohei Ohtani, right? The Blue Jays were ranked number two on this list. We posed the question, who's the untouchables for you as a fan in a bringing in Shohei Ohtani trade? And we got so many, we'll get to this later in the show, but we got so many comments that were like, I would trade Kevin Biggio,
Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Right?
and some Adam Klofenstein or something, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's never going to get that done. Like you have, so again, for me, where I land on Kirk is just, you have to look at it from the other team's perspective, right? Anybody who's going to want a catcher. Like, the years of control on Kirk is better than the years of control left on Jansen, right? Mm-hmm. So the money you're going to have to pay on Kirk is, you know, a lot more team friendly if you are a small market team who is on the outside of the playoffs looking in and you're not looking to compete anytime soon, right? Which is the only reason you would give up one of your star players in return, right? So
yeah,
that's what it comes down to for me. It just makes more sense. But again, if someone wants to give us more for Danny Jansen than they would for Alejandro or for Alejandro Kirk, then sure, I would do that. I'd be open to all three catchers.
Really good, I think that's a really good point, Adam, that maybe not enough people are paying attention to, is that I don't think this front office literally has one catcher they're shopping. I think they're throwing a pretty wide net out there and they're kind of seeing what opposing organizations value the most. And I think they're probably going to move from that standpoint, right?
Agreed. All right, so there you go. That's what to keep in mind on the catcher trade discussion front moving forward.
And we did it, Adam. Once a week, we have to go out there and put a disclaimer that we both really like Alejandro Kirk and value him as a catcher.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Next one comes in from Twitter. Well, Twitter is still a thing. Blue Jays balls 68. Messaged
yeah, it's a very
us.
Positive comment. This one was.
So they say, hey guys, I'm convinced the Shatkins regime is either idiots or literally trying to sabotage this team. They gave Teoscar away for nothing and now watch them sign Nimmo and put the nail in the coffin. And you're going to spend $100 million and should get someone good. Oh, if you're going to spend $100 million, you should get someone good. Plus, of course, they're ignoring the fact that what we really needed is pitching.
Okay, so a lot to unpack here.
Yes. Appreciate the passion for Blue Jays fans.
Yes, absolutely. You know what? Appreciate the passion. And this isn't a sentiment that is an isolated one. There are people who feel this way. I strongly disagree with the number one. The sabotage thing is hilarious. Like, if that's really what you're alluding to here, that Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro have weaseled their way into this Blue Jays organization in 2016 and then proceeded to play the long game to dismantle them from within, not just dismantle with them, but like literally make them a playoff team and then just not do enough to push it over the top.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah. One of them had a bad relationship with someone from Toronto and they just hold the whole city accountable for that. So no, the sabotage thing is funny. I mean, I'll keep this short, but I watched this show on Netflix with my daughter a couple of weeks ago, The Mole. And it's just one of these like Survivor style game shows,
right?
Except one of them is the secret person who's trying to sabotage the missions. Right. And my daughter kept making a point. Oh, I think it's this guy because see, he did this badly. Or, oh, I think it, you know, and I always have to ask her, I'm like, well, is this really someone who's sabotaging or is this just an idiot who is trying their best? Right. And that's how I feel about us, Scott, is we're just two idiots trying our best. So.
Exactly. And maybe this commenter is correct. Time will tell. Maybe Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro are just two idiots trying their best. Which
I hope they're two geniuses trying their best. Playing,
I agree 100% as Blue Jays fans. If they're just idiots, I am. Oh my god, man! Can you imagine 5 years down the road when they replace these two, and you're just like, oh, we got to go through this again?
Yeah.
But I don't feel that's honestly the way it is. I truly, truly believe that there is so much nuance to what this front office is doing currently. And that the Teoscar trade was the first step in numerous steps. And to actually judge that trade on what has happened right now isn't doing it justice. And I know there's so many Jays fans out there that hate hearing that, that are literally like, the best player was Teoscar Hernandez, and the team who gets the best player always wins the trade. And there is a little bit of truth to that.
Mm-hmm.
But like, let's take one step back and realize what a huge addition Eric Swanson was. Really, they added one of the top relievers in all of baseball in this trade, and he's under control for the next 3 years. Adam Macko is a nice little lottery ticket as well. A big left-hander with a very high K rate. He's in high A. So they add another prospect. Listen, if this team was rebuilding, this is a fantastic move. And the Blue Jays, I think, maybe just straight up win the trade. But that's not the case, right? Because there are nuances to what's going on right now. And I think Shai Davidi is who brought this up. And maybe we can throw that tweet up there now. Yeah, let's pull that
tweet up here right now.
And I'll let you kind of read it here as my memory is not the greatest.
Oh, that's right. So this is from November 16th. This is just after Teoscar was traded. So Shai Davidi tweets, this Blue Jays front office doesn't jump without knowing where it's going to land. And then he puts it up there. Where do you think this team's going to land after trading Teoscar Hernandez? It's a good point. I think, you know, it's funny. As a Jays fan, you're in one of two camps in 2022, I think. You're either in the, oh, I miss Alex Anthopoulos. He was the best thing that's ever happened to this organization. Or you're in the camp that I'm squarely in, and I think you're with me here, Scott, is that we trust Shapiro and Atkins to lead this ship to the glory land.
And we don't have a choice.
We don't have a choice. That's correct. Here's another tweet from Shai Davidi later that same day. So this is kind of related to it. But he says, Ross Atkins has said a few times that the Blue Jays have opportunities to add outfielders via free agency. But I thought this was telling. Quote from Ross Atkins. We're in a better position to do so now from a resource, which is money, and from a playing time and recruitment standpoint. End of quote. Free agents can now see how they fit the puzzle. Right? Tough to go out and get a top tier center fielder, outfielder, when he's looking at a crowded outfield. When there's not a hole in
center field. Yes.
Right? So, makes a lot of sense. I do trust the process.
This idea that this front office is flying by the seat of their pants is so misguided. There is no way they're flying by the seat of their pants. They 100% have a plan. And whether it's a plan that we like or not, it's irrelevant. There is a plan in place. You do not move a middle of the order bat like Teoscar Hernandez without having a clear vision of where you want this team to wind up. And we've talked about this. This is the thing. Everyone at the end of this season was screaming from the top of the mountains, right? Listen, we need to shake up. This team's got to have a little bit of a different identity. It's too unbalanced of a lineup. Well, you don't balance a lineup. You don't shake a team up without making some major moves. I love Teoscar Hernandez. I am truly still bummed to watch him leave. And my God, what a fun outfield the Mariners have right now in J-Rod and Teo. Like, it's going to be smile central. There's going to be, you know, the little jump in the air and the bang in the wrists, and they'll be doing little dances in the outfield. But trust me, whoever we bring in, right? George will teach them the new dance or whatever they're doing, right? They'll get them fitted for the jacket or, you know, like whatever. There'll be new fun dynamics. It'll be the same thing. We'll fall in love with whoever they bring in. Fingers crossed, right? Like, there's just, the $100 million to bring in a good player and acting like Brandon Nimmo isn't a good player. Like, I don't know where this narrative has come from, but it is completely a false narrative. If there is any reason to be down on Brandon Nimmo, it is his injured past. Okay, it is not the numbers he's putting up. Go ahead.
Let me jump in here. Let's just clarify for anybody who's not familiar with Brandon Nimmo what type of a player he is, because he did mention the injury history. That's my biggest concern, is I don't want to have two part-time center fielders / full-time DHs. We already have that in George Springer. Brandon Nimmo is a left-handed bat, which we need, right?
Yes.
Not known for his power, right? He's not a big home run guy, nope. But he is a high contact on base percentage guy, which is what we need still.
Yes.
Right? Like, we do need guys on bases for guys like Vlad, you know, we can't just win with 45 solo shots, right? So am I missing anything else on Brandon Nimmo, or is that kind of sum it up? Like, he's really good.
It really does. The home run
number is a sexy number that he doesn't have, but
I mean, he hit 16 home runs last year, so he's not going to be Teoscar's 25 home runs. You're taking a 10 home run dip, but you know how many leadoff home runs Springer has had? Like, so many. And it would be, I'm not saying that they necessarily would move him out of the leadoff spot, but my God, George Springer hitting second would be so sexy. And think about all of the RBIs that come off that first home run of the game, rather than it being a solo shot. All of a sudden they're up 2-0. This is not something to just, you know, poo-poo so quickly. And on top of it, I read a really interesting article from Eno Saris in The Athletic. And basically he was going over the misconception of injured players. And basically what he said, he went through all sorts of injured players and all sorts of healthy players. And once a guy plays a full season, he is statistically not any more likely to be injured than any regular healthy player. That a lot of these injury-plagued players, it's year after year, right? And it's just like, they just can't get healthy for whatever reason, bad luck, stuff like that. Like, even if you look at Nemo's injuries, I think it was friend of the show, Lewis Foster, right? Australian kid who's got a heck of an arm on him and might even wind up playing some college ball here down the road in a year or two, which maybe I'll even bug him to come on Long Toss on Sunday, which is what we're going to do. But he mentioned his injuries, and it's something like a bulge in his disc, right? Like really bad luck that weren't all, these injuries didn't have anything to do with each other.
He doesn't have bad knees. He's not like a chronic bad knees guy.
Exactly.
I get it. It's kind of the same. Okay. I am concerned with the injury history, but at the same time, I can recognize the fact that I am a Danny Jansen injury history apologist.
Yes.
And it's very similar, right? Danny Jansen was on pace for more home runs than Aaron Judge last year on a games played basis, right? I don't know if that number held true by the end of the year, but there was a point in like August.
Yes.
Anyways, it would be nice to get a full, I mean, relative for catching, but a full season out of Danny Jansen. It is a concern for me too.
And of course it's a concern, and it is not something that should be ignored by the front office, by the way. And we'll see what direction they're going. But Brandon Nimmo did play 151 games last year. He had the healthiest season he's had in his entire career. And he looked really good in center field. It was defensively the best season he's had in center field. Now, I know we might as well bring this up right here because ESPN just had an article where they were kind of predicting where free agents would go and the money that would go their way. Okay, so I think it was Josh Goldberg.
Yeah, I got the tweet here. Tweeted.
Perfect. And all these analysts from ESPN, three of them, I think there were four in total. Three of the four figured Nimmo would go to the Blue Jays. And the money predicted was 6 years, $135 million, 5 years, $120 million, or 6 years, $142 million. So somewhere between $23 to $27 million AAV, right? Per year. It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
But to think that this front office is just going to do this willy-nilly and not have a plan, again, I really don't believe that's the case. This isn't just Ross Atkins. But in my opinion, Anthopoulos by far flew by the seat of his pants way more in that 2015 season when he pushed all his chips in and made that incredible trade deadline acquisitions, probably arguably one of the most exciting trade deadlines in all of baseball. Forget about Blue Jays history. I mean, the guy went all in, and that could have went terribly, terribly wrong, and it worked out. You never know how it's going to work until the pieces are in place.
This is true. We talked about that with the whole offseason, right? It's going to be something you look back on. and making it.
Now we'll move on right away here, but I did want to really quickly address, there's a lot of people out there that are just saying, well, just trade for a center fielder instead.
Right. That is, this is the next comment here. This one comes from our Discord, and we'll just wrap this one in here. So from Sentimental Hygiene in our Discord, said, just finished going through all the Pirates media and blogosphere to try and gauge Reynolds' availability to see if any of that had changed. It hasn't. I think any fan who believes it is an option should lower their expectations considerably. From what I can gather, they won't even consider moving on from him until next offseason, or might more likely the season after that.
So Brian Reynolds is the center fielder for the Pirates. He has been sought after from Blue Jays fans for about a year now. His name comes up from time to time. I know even at the trade deadline, folks were like, can we get David Bednar and Brian Reynolds out of Pittsburgh? The Pirates don't want to trade term. They don't want to trade cheap pieces. This is not their MO.
No.
And they, you know, like Reynolds is under contract for another 3 years. He had a down season this year. So in arbitration, he's even going to cost them less than before. And they know his ceiling. Like, even if you look at the trade market, and there are options out there, right? Lars Nootbaar is an option. We've already talked about Dalton Varsho out of Arizona. I would love to see Varsho in a Jays uniform. But even these guys very much so haven't reached their potential yet. Brandon Nimmo is still the most proven best option out there. And I'm going to tell you right now that there are way better starting pitching options and trade available than there are center fielders. And it makes far more sense, in my opinion, if you're going to go the free agent route for one and trade route for the other, for it to be outfield, free agent, pitching, trade.
Yep. I'm with you there.
All right. Let's move along.
All right. Next one, we'll go to Patreon for. So this one comes in from Wyatt. Says, hey, Adam, do you think the Jays take the gamble and sign Cody Bellinger to a multi-year deal? And if he's complete garbage in 2023, would that lead to Ross Atkins being canned?
So let's start with the last question.
Okay.
I'm going to just straight up say no. What do you think?
No, not at all.
Ross Atkins, everybody, is under contract for 4 more years. And I think that there's at least a year, maybe two, before the heat is high enough on Mark Shapiro to fire his boy, right? Like, this is his guy. He brought him with him from Cleveland when he came over in 2016 as the new president of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, and if we're talking about a multi-year deal for Cody Bellinger, it's going to
be an opt-out.
There's going to be an opt-out, or there's going to be a real discount attached to it. It's going to be a creative contract. I've seen options or suggestions out there that it would be maybe a 2-year, $16 million deal with
an opt-out. Yeah,
with an opt-out for Cody. So the idea there being, it's low risk for the Jays. Worst case scenario, he still sucks. We pay him $8 million a year for 2 years. And best case scenario, he's an MVP this year, opts out and gets to retest free agency and go, see, I'm a star again. Now gets his big payday. But in the case that he's garbage and we sign him to a multi-year deal, like if he's getting term, if he's getting 4 or 5 years, it's going to be for like $30 million. It'll be so cheap in order for the Jays to actually make a long-term deal like that, given his most recent 3 years statistically. So that being said, even if that's the case and he's garbage, I don't think we're going to be setting that much money on fire to the point where Ross Atkins' job is in jeopardy. Now, what I do think is, back to the last guy we were talking about, Brandon Nimmo, that is a more likely situation. And I still don't think that's likely. If we give Brandon Nimmo, hashtag Hyman. That's an old throwback for the fans have been with us a long time. if we sign him to 6 years, $142 million, and we recognize next year or the year after that, oh, no, here we go. Injuries again. This guy can't stay on the field. What have we done? That's a more consequential red mark on Ross Atkins than a high upside, low risk deal for Cody Bellinger, in my opinion. Am I booked to lunch on this?
No, I agree with you. Let's talk Bellinger really quick here. I know that just yesterday we were even going to do a video about it, and we're like, I can't bring. We did a video about Bellinger 3 days ago about him being a possibility with the Jays. Every single time, some friggin'.
There's a lot more smoke.
Bomb or
there's a lot more smoke about it up now. With a,
like, yeah.
Until there's actual flames, we'll hold off on that clickbait for Cody Bellinger. I still think he's a good fit. But
now, if Cody Bellinger has the demand that he must be guaranteed starting center fielder position, where are you at? Are you looking at this Toronto Blue Jays 2023 and the fact that their goal is a World Series? Do you think that this, a guy who hasn't hit in 2 years, is worth the risk? Now, I'm just going to, before you answer that, I'm going to read you something here from at Views on the Six on Twitter.
Okay.
All they put was Bradley Zimmer, 2021 to 2022, 208 games.
I already played. Hate where you're going with this.
208 games played, 18 stolen bases, a 1.3 B-WAR. And for those of you who are like, what's F-WAR? What's B-WAR? Just so you know, F-WAR is Fangraph's version of wins above replacement. B-WAR is Baseball Reference wins above replacement.
And which one is
the two competing sites?
They're very similar, but which one is adjusted for weather? I can't remember which one that is. All right. I don't care about either one.
Okay, so Zimmer's in those 208 games, his batting average was 201. His on-base percentage was 295, slugging 314, a 610 OPS, and a 70 OPS plus, which means he's 30% below the average. Okay. Cody Bellinger, 2021 to 2022, 239 games played, so a few more games. 17 stolen bases, a negative 0.4 B war. So he literally cost the Dodgers wins. Batting average of 193, an on base percentage of 256, a slug of 355, and a 611 OPS, 64 OPS plus. So 35. And basically, that's all he put. But my guess is the point of this is, if you're going to spend $16 million on Cody Bellinger and he's going to be Bradley Zimmer, you might as well have spent $2 million on 2 years of Bradley Zimmer, who is already Bradley Zimmer.
No, absolutely wrong. I hate this so much. I can't argue with the numbers since, what was it, since 2020?
Yes. 210 okay. games played around
all right.
for both.
All right, all right, all right. What is the, okay, what, I'm so worked up right now. What is the actual chances? What is the actual chances that Bradley Zimmer, over the next 10 years of his career, gets a single MVP vote? A single MVP vote. Is it zero? Is it less than zero? I think it's less than zero.
Obviously.
Okay.
I'm well aware.
Cody Bellinger already has an MVP. This is what I'm saying. Is like, yeah. Sure, the floor is there, right? If we're going to spend $2 million, what's another six for Cody Bellinger? The point is, Cody Bellinger literally was one of the difference makers on the Dodgers getting a World Series.
True. And we even talked about his ability to still show up in the playoffs is actually mind-blowing. Like 2020, he had four home runs and really helped lead that team to the World Series, and his 2020 wasn't very good. 2021, he was god-awful, some injury problems. He showed up in that playoffs as well. He hit 350 in the 2021 playoffs. Now, 2022, he had more, his shoulder. This is the thing. Is his shoulder fucked, dude? Like, is it done?
Let's get him down to Dunedin, man. Let's get him to that facility and let's figure that out. But I'm willing to roll the dice on it.
Now, like, we've talked about this before because I feel the same way. I'm all for bringing Cody Bellinger in. I'm just not for him being given an everyday spot in center field.
Okay.
If let's he's get... going to take Raimel Tapia's fourth outfielder spot and play 140 games bouncing around the outfield and being used as a defensive, you know, because his defense is great, but.
I'm not a contract expert, but I don't know how you would even make that a formal stipulation of his contract. Like, I understand, like, when Ha-Sung Kim came over from Japan, he wanted to go to a team where he was guaranteed he wasn't going to get sent down, right? Got to stay on the 26-man active roster as long as I'm healthy. If that's the condition with Cody Bellinger, sure, right? But I don't know how you would even put that in a contract that, yeah, you're going to be out on the field for 9 innings every single game. So I don't think that that's a realistic formal guarantee. Am I out to lunch here? I could see you already making a face.
No, I don't disagree with you. I don't think it would be written in the contract. I think that it would be verbalized at the negotiation table. And I think that it would be something that they would weigh between teams, right? So if you're Boris and you're going to the Blue Jays and you're saying, listen, Cody wants to be an everyday player. Such and such a team is saying that they won't do that. Such and such a team is saying they won't do that. If you match their money and guarantee 130 games, if he's healthy, whatever it may be, you know, that he's going to lean towards you. Do I actually think that they're going to have a stipulation in the contract? Of course not.
Even in an informal way, I would do that if that means we're going to give him less money. Like, if this is a Cody Bellinger, if this is the approach, if I'm Cody Bellinger and I go, I want to bet on myself this year, right? I want a 2-year deal, but I want an opt out after one and I'm going to ball out. And the only way that I can really prove my worth is by playing every day. Okay, if you're willing to take less money, like if the deal was going to be $8 million a year, you're a fourth outfielder, but you want to bet on yourself and come here for $5 million a year, and we'll guarantee that you're the starting outfield. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that.
I think too that in Bellinger's case, you would hope that his confidence isn't so shot that he doesn't think he can play his way on. So let's take a look at this Blue Jays outfield. Right now, it's pretty much a guarantee of George Springer and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. And that's pretty much all that's on the book. So let's do some dreaming here. Let's say they actually do wind up going out and getting Brandon Nimmo for 5 years, $120 million. So now you've got pretty much your everyday outfield in place. Now, remember, Raimel Tapia played over 140 games for this team as the fourth outfielder.
Yep.
Both Tapia and Zimmer are gone. Okay, so let's say Cody Bellinger looks at these starting three and already knows that as a fourth outfielder, he's going to see a lot of time. He also sees that the Blue Jays are trying desperately to balance this lineup and add some lefty bats with some impact within the batting order. Okay, so you look at that, you look at Lourdes Gurriel Jr., and maybe you don't think to yourself as Cody Bellinger, you can knock off Nimmo or Springer, but you look at Gurriel and you're like, okay, well, they should put me in against lefties at least. And Gurriel has had some injury problems and he's also a very streaky hitter. Maybe I can play more than Lourdes Gurriel Jr. can. And like Gurriel is going to make $5 million this year. So if he's being paid $5 million and you're kind of your third / fourth outfielders are Gurriel and Bellinger at, let's say, $8 million a year, I'm all for that. And then you make up for that by, let's say, Otto Lopez is your fifth outfielder, your utility dude. He's going to make the league minimum, and that way you're not spending any money on that bench piece. I'm all for that.
You keep jamming Brandon Nimmo in there.
I don't want Bellinger as the lone dude. I want I want an established.
Well, okay. No matter what we do, I guess you can't just go through the season with three outfielders, especially when George Springer is one of them. As much as moving him to right field is hopefully, in theory, going to ease up the workload on his body, he's still going to have 40 to 80 games at DH next year.
Yeah.
Right. $142 million for 80's the dream,
right? Because if he's DHing 80 games, he's playing 150.
Yeah, $142 million is a lot to give a guy who's only played more than 100 games twice in his career. I'm still gun shy about Nemo. I hope I'm wrong on that, Scott. I really do. But again, back to the Cody Bellinger thing. This is how you win. Like these are the unsexy moves that, if they pan out, are the difference makers. If they don't pan out, it's not much of a setback. Right. But I don't know. You play fantasy sports at all?
Of course.
All right. I'm a fantasy football guy. This is how you win your league, is not with, you know, drafting a good guy in the first round who turns out to be a good guy. Like, of course, you can't win your league in the first round of the draft. Where you win the league is when you draft Tom Brady as a 41-year-old quarterback in the 11th round, who outperforms everyone and is like the second best quarterback in the league. And you got him for a steal. This is our Cody Bellinger. This is where guys like him, or you know what? Actually, I was texting him with my brother. He wants two of the following three, Cody Bellinger, Brandon Nemo, or Joey Gallo.
Oh, and I knew it was going to be Joey Gallo.
I wanted to hate it. But Joey Gallo, I think next year, is going to be in a perfect comparable to Cody Bellinger this year, especially like once the shift is banned and we legislate baseball into making Joey Gallo a good player. Give me Joey Gallo on a discount, man. Like,
I will have some real internal demons to set aside if Joey Gallo is brought to the Blue Jays.
I know. We'll be. Yeah. All right. Well, that's
all right. Let's move along. We can talk this all day. I'm not disagreeing with you, by the way. I like Cody Bellinger. I just disagree with you as getting him as our sole center fielder and the replacement for Teoscar. I just don't like that. Now, giving him a flyer as the fourth outfielder and seeing if he can play his way into the everyday guy and put Lourdes on the bench. Hey, I'm all for it.
All right. That's a good one. Let's end that there and move on to the next one then. Okay, so next one comes in from Scott Carter. Commented on our video about Shohei Ohtani. There was an MLB article, MLB.com article, in which they suggested ranking the landing spots for Shohei Ohtani in a trade. Mets were number one, but the Blue Jays were number two. This was a pure speculation article.
Yeah.
He's not getting moved this year, I don't think. Almost certainly, I don't think he's coming to the Blue Jays. But Scott Carter, we got so many comments on it, and I agree with most of them and the evaluation that people were putting out there. But Scott Carter's comment really summed it up nicely. So he said, I think the price would just be too high. You still need five other starters as Shohei only pitches on a six-man rotation, which is true, by the way. And unless Rogers are going to greatly increase the payroll, I don't think Toronto can make Shohei work. And then he edited his comment and added, just to be clear, I am not down on Ohtani. But I think that only a team that is going to have a salary around the tax limit is going to be able to put a team around him. There's no point in us becoming the Angels and having the best player, but never making the playoffs.
That is a very good point. And even looking forward to free agency next year with Ohtani, I think he is dead on with the prediction of only a team that is prepared to spend to the luxury tax is going to be in on him, for the exact reason he said. He's going to cost a buttload of money and it's probably going to be worth it. You're going to all of a sudden insert the best left-handed bat in baseball, or right right up there anyways, very arguably anyways, into that lineup. And then you're also going to be able to insert one of the top left-handed pitchers in all of baseball into your lineup. Yeah, that's probably going to cost you $40 to $50 million a year. And to put a team around that, I mean, the luxury tax is at what, 100 or 220, I think it is right
something
now.
Like that.
Like, yeah, it makes sense. You're probably going to need to spend to that luxury tax threshold. But little caveat here, there's no reason to believe the Toronto Blue Jays can't be that team, especially in this window. And I know you're making that face, but I'm just saying, like, they've got the money. And if you look at Shohei, he's a little bit of a unicorn because $50 million a year, you're going to get that all back. You're going to get that all back in marketing. You're going to get that back in jersey sales, merchandise. He is going to be the face of your franchise. You're going to be able to put his face behind every single Rogers commercial out there. Like, I don't know, man. He is.
I'm not shaking my head because I don't think he can make the money work. I think he can make the money work. I'm shaking my head because he is the anti Cody Bellinger approach.
Yes.
He is the top tier guy that you spend all your money on.
Yes.
But then this is the risk, right? Is like, if he doesn't pan out, if he does have a massive regression or a case of bad tacos, God forbid, now you've got $600 million over 12 years invested in a, I don't know.
Good thing you got Cody Bellinger playing center field for $8 million.
Yeah, it really knocks down your average. But okay, hold on. I know you're making fun of me. But that's
serious.
That's where the value
I know
Cody Bellinger is that you save some money on a guy who could finish with MVP votes, right? That allows you that flexibility to go, you know what? We got Shohei Ohtani and Cody Bellinger this year. That's a good offseason.
My favorite part of this whole mailbag was me comparing Bradley Zimmer's numbers with Cody Bellinger's numbers over the last 2 years and your reaction. You were just like, no.
All right.
We're getting long in the tooth here, buddy. Let's get to the end of this thing.
Let's get to the end of this for sure. All right. So from Mustard Tiger in the Discord said, actually tagged me in this comment and said, you today said for sure Springer is not being traded. So of course my brain instantly said, well, what if we did trade Springer? And I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around it, but is there a scenario in which Springer is movable? And then we signed a Nemo with the freed up money. Does that make any sense? Do I hate it? I have no idea. My brain is melting a bit thinking about it. Can Springer even be moved without eating so much of his contract?
This is how 3-day threads start in Discord, actually. Mm,
yeah.
Comments like that. I love Mustard Tiger just being like, I don't know. So this is my opinion on it, and I'd love to hear what you think, Adam. I think George Springer still has a ton of value. I think he still is an incredible bat. His plate approach and his swing choices are elite. Those always age well. I know his biggest knock is his health again. He is making, what was it, $25 million a
year? $25 million a year,
yep. He's got 4 years left on his contract. Yeah, I think George Springer has value and could be traded, especially when you look at the free agent options currently for the outfield. I think that there is a little bit of a hole there. I think it's why Brandon Nemo's price tag is being pushed so high, is that there's not a lot of competition there, especially if you look at shortstop and the free agent class there, right? Definitely a lot more competition, and some of those guys may get less than they actually should for the exact opposite reason. There's so many high-end shortstops available this season. So, yeah, I think there is a world where George Springer could be moved. I don't think it benefits the Jays personally to do so, but I think we watched Vernon Wells get traded. You can move immovable contracts, and I don't think George Springer's is that.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't think he's movable, but with some qualifying statements to go along with it. Like, yes, I would have said the same thing about Vernon Wells in 2010, or whatever, that Vernon Wells' contract was immovable. Somehow you get out from under it, right? Bad contracts do get moved. He does have 4 years left, $100 million. Who's a team that would be interested in that? It would be a team who's in the outfield market, right? Someone who's in on a Brandon Nimmo but misses out, right? Would I, if I was the New York Mets, would I rather Brandon Nimmo or George Springer? I think I would rather George Springer.
I think so too. I think if I'm the Blue Jays, I'd rather George
Springer. I think almost anybody would rather George Springer than Brandon Nimmo, especially at that contract. When you compare, I'm going to have to give Nimmo 6 years, $140 million, or I can get George for 4 years, $100 million. It's comparable, and you're getting a better player. You're going to have to trade, give up assets to get that, though. What's a team like the Mets or the Yankees, if they lose Aaron Judge, or any of these teams, going to want to move to get Aaron Judge? Because, again, this is what it comes down to for me, is that a team that's competing only wants to move guys that aren't MLB ready. They only want to move AAA and lower prospects. That does not help the Blue Jays, right? Any teams that are willing to move an MLB ready guy or someone who is, you know, pitching already in the MLB, whatever the case may be, that would help the Blue Jays, aren't interested in adding on. Like the Arizona Diamondbacks aren't looking to add George Springer as their saving grace. So they're out. Yeah. So that is part of my thinking process here. When I go, he's unmovable, just to frame it in a way where, like, yeah, he could be movable, but that means the Blue Jays have totally punted.
I agree. In my opinion, any scenario where we see George Springer moved,
full rebuild.
Look out, because salary is being, we've already watched Gausman and Berríos be moved.
Now looking towards the Tiedemann or Elvis Martinez, you know, the new young core as being the replacements for Vladdy and Bo. We're probably letting them walk if we haven't traded them already.
We're talking about the new general manager and what direction he's taking. Like, my God, in a scenario where Springer is being moved, our world has come down around us. Okay.
So, yes, that is my qualifier, is that George Springer with his contract cannot be moved. Yes, unless our stadium burns to the ground, literally. So that's my thoughts on that. Okay. We got two more to get to, and then let's get out of here.
All right.
Next one comes in from Discord as well. So Sir Rancelot says, I have to say this podcast show is my favorite. You guys do a fantastic job. Now get some 80s Blue Jays on there. Jesse B or Shaker would jump on for sure. Hardest problem with us is these 80s Blue Jays don't have social media.
hard to get
a hold of them.
They don't have an
Instagram for us to slide into their DMs on. You know, it's tough.
And we've been very lucky to have the guest list that we have, and a lot of them have helped us get a hold of other people, but we just haven't kind of broken into that 80s Jays realm. My God, it would be a dream come true to sit down and talk baseball with Jesse Barfield. And I think all of our fans watching right now would agree. If you know how to get a hold of him, hey, let us know, gang. Like, his DMs aren't open on Twitter and he doesn't have an Instagram. And what do you do? But appreciate that, Sir Rancelot. I'm glad you're enjoying the podcast, and everyone else listening, believe us when we say we're working every day to bring in people that have no business talking to such boneheads like us onto the show.
Yeah. First question we're asking every new interview though is, who's your agent?
just so we don't look like idiots down the road.
Exactly. All right. Last one of the day here comes in from Twitter. So at JaysFan4407 DM'd us and said, hey guys, can one of you please explain to me how in the heck these steamer projections work? Why is Alek Manoah not considered a top 25 pitcher? Is he actually going to drop off as much as they say?
Okay, so first of all, I've seen a lot of Blue Jays fans be pretty worked up about this steamer projection for 2023. It's for the pitchers. And yes, Alek Manoah, according to Steamer, which is the projection of FanGraphs. Okay. Mm-hmm. According to Steamer, Alek Manoah is going to have an ERA of 4.09, an xFIP, which is the ERA equivalent, but kind of takes out the defensive metrics, right? It says it's going to be a 3.98 xFIP. He is not a top 25 pitcher, according to these projections. Listen. I don't believe in vampires. I don't believe in fortune tellers. I don't believe in honest politicians. I don't believe that olives can expire. And I for sure do not believe in steamer projections. All right. I know there's stat heads here that are hearing me say this and they hate it. And listen, there is a reason to take these steamer projections and hold a little bit of weight to them. You know, basically what they do is they use past performance and aging trends throughout the game to develop future projections for players. Guys, this is still a guessing game. I think one of the biggest reasons they're saying that Manoah is going to take a step back is because that's the easy projection to pick. He finished third in Cy Young voting in the AL. I mean, I could have just looked at Robbie Ray last year and been like, yeah, Robbie Ray is going to take a step back. And he did. And I look like a freaking genius. No. It's like, you take the top guys and say that they're going to take a step back, you're probably going to be right. It's 162-game baseball season. Do I think Alek Manoah is going to all of a sudden become a 4 ERA guy? I honestly don't. I truly believe Big Puma is the real deal, and he is going to be a top 10 pitcher for the foreseeable future. And I mean, right, you look around baseball, man. Look around baseball. You actually think there's 25 starters better than Alek Manoah? I don't think, other than Yankees fans who don't even think that, but they just love to vocalize their hate of Alek Manoah, who, by the way, was on Serge Ibaka's cooking show the other day and was asked by Serge who he thought the biggest cheater in baseball history was. And you know what he said? Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, I love it.
Shots fired.
Oh, man, it's good. No, it's really good. Alek Manoah is great. He's on Hall of Fame trajectory. So is the easy course of action to say the guy that only has 2 years of experience maybe isn't destined for the Hall of Fame yet and is going to have a bump somewhere along the way. Like, yeah, it's, you know, it was the same thing with Vladdy last year when he hit the year before 47 home runs.
48.
48 home runs. We, you know,
you and
we
I, took a step what back. Did we do? What did we do? We did not take the smart projection. We were like, yes, he breaks 50 this year, right? Yeah. So, I mean, there is some intelligence to taking a look at the numbers and who the guys at the absolute peak of their game and projecting that, yeah, they probably take a slight step back in their production. It's a projection, gang. It's a projection. It means nothing. It's looking into a crystal ball.
Interesting to note here, though, this same projection site has Jose Berríos finishing as a top 4 pitcher. So
they also have,
I'm just kidding. I'm making that up. Don't.
No, but legit. You say Kikuchi, they have projected at a 3.89 ERA and they have him projected higher than Alek Manoah and Nestor Cortes.
Okay. So I want to just say this. I want to get this out here. If you say Kikuchi has a better season than Alek Manoah, things have either gone horribly wrong or horribly right.
Or horribly crazily right.
If that's the case, if we got a, you know, sub 2 ERA from Yusei Kikuchi and ERA around 2 from Manoah, I'm enjoying this movie.
Someone please clip this and throw it in our face in September when we're talking about, do you want to see Yusei Kikuchi start game 1 or do you want to see?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's wrap it up there. That's it for mailbag.
honestly, all of the discourse throughout the week is always appreciated. All of you interact on a regular basis, and it's truly a little bit mind-blowing. Makes my skin crawl a little bit to kind of think about the community that has been built here around the walk-off. It's very, very cool. You can always reach out to us. Don't hesitate to do so. We are friendly enough, if you will. You can do so on Instagram, The Walk-Off Podcast, on Twitter, at Walk-Off Podcast. Join the Discord. We have new members constantly. In fact, we've had a big influx recently. I know we mentioned that, but the link for that is in the show notes. It's always free, and it's always happening in there. There's always guys bringing stuff up and big, long threads to get involved in there. Anyways, all the best, everybody. We will see you tomorrow. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk-Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh. Osborne with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Long move.
Thanks for listening.